And this hour, of course, the lover of Ouija boards, the mistress of the macabre, Karen Dolman, joins us to chat with us during Ghost to Ghost. And let's go back to Don in Canada on the international line. He's been on hold for a while telling us his story where he bought a 1901 Victorian house in the States. And people would see this little old lady looking in the window. He would hear the sound of a piano playing, and there was no piano up there, at least then. But somebody took a picture of the outside of the house, and everybody saw this little old lady peeking out the window. Don, I'll let you pick it up. You said then a storm came by.
Yeah, about a year and a half ago, Greensboro and the houses up in Caswell County, just north of Greensboro, we had some tornadoes touch down, and it happened at night. And the attic's about 1,000 square foot, and I could hear the metal roof ripping off the house. And I didn't really want to go up there at night and get depressed because I knew what was happening. So when the sun came out, I went downstairs. You know, I had my gym shorts and a T-shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
So I went downstairs outside the house to look and see how bad the roof damage was. And it's got the original door on the house, which is a huge, heavy oak door with bevel glass. And it's got the old-style deadbolt where you need a key to lock it. It's no automatic, and the door's heavy. So I go out, and I look, and sure as heck, about two-thirds of my roof is peeled up like a can opener, took it like a tuna fish can and just rolled it right up.
Wow.
And it has three chimneys, so that kept the roof from coming completely off the house. So I'm like, this is great. So I go back into the house, and the door's closed, and it's locked. And I'm like, you know, maybe I'm sleepy, maybe there's no way I locked the door. So then I thought maybe I did. I'm not paying attention because I'm upset about the roof. So I'm looking for the keys. The neighbors come over. We're combing the whole front yard. Can't find the keys. Luckily, I didn't lock my car, and I had keys to another car. So I go get breakfast, come back home. And in my second car, I had a key to the front door I didn't realize in the glove box.
Uh-huh.
So I open the front door, go up to my master bedroom, and there's the keys on my nightstand.
Oh.
So I know I didn't leave them in the yard, and I didn't have them with me. The ghost was upset that the roof got damaged, and she locked me out of the house.
That's
and
you,
there's
do
no
you
other
still...
way to explain it, because I didn't even know I had a second key. I was just rooting around my car, and I called the locksmith and was going to try to get him out to open the door. And luckily, I had a second key, but yeah, she got upset, and that was the only time she's been mad at me. She locked me out of the house.
Do you still own the house, Don?
Oh, yeah, still own the house.
You think she's still up there?
Oh, yeah, had the roof fixed, and, oh, yeah, she's still there. The other people that owned it before me, she used to play concerts up in the attic, and like I say, there's no piano. But, she hasn't been upset since then. It's been about a year and a half.
And, of course, there's no piano now, but I'm sure there was back in 1901 when they built that house. That's a great story.
Hey, how's it going? It's Jack Osborne here. My favorite Halloween movie is Nightmare Before Christmas. I hope you guys have a happy Halloween.
Jack Osborne, great guy. He's the son of Ozzy Osborne, of course, and a dear friend of Coast to Coast, and a great television producer, comes up with some pretty innovative shows. And how cool is that? Thanks, Jack. Really appreciate that. And we are dealing with Ghost to Ghost stories, taking your call. So let's start by going to Drew in Houston as we come back here. Hi, Drew. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Happy Halloween.
You too. Did you have a great one?
Yeah, it's pretty good so far.
You know what I love about Halloween, Drew? It's the start of what I call the holiday season. Now we go into Thanksgiving, then Christmas, then New Year's. It just doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, it really does. It just started getting cool here in Houston, so it is a great time of year.
Yeah, cold, and I'm in St. Louis, and it was cold. As a matter of fact, this is the first time it has been this cold on Halloween. Hardly any of the kids went out tonight. It was crazy.
Oh, wow.
But go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to read a story, and it's 100% true, unembellished in any way.
Okay.
And I call this a ghostly scene from my sleeping bag. It was another hot summer in Texas in 1981, and I was excited to be going to summer camp with my best friend to Camp Champions in Marble Falls, just outside of Austin. The camp was located on the bank of LBJ, Lake LBJ, and was part of the Highland Lakes, a chain of six freshwater lakes in central Texas formed by six dams on the lower Colorado River. The lakefront scene would later set the stage for a remarkable paranormal event. There was excitement in the air as my friend and I were riding in the back of my mom's station wagon, playing air drums to a new song called Tom Sawyer, being played on the radio by my generous mother, which was a life-saving reprieve from the Carpenters, the Singles, on 8-track tape. Our excitement level would only increase upon our arrival. We had so many fun activities lined up for us. In addition to the activities, the camp was full of friendly camp counselors. One of the most colorful personalities we would experience in camp was that of Pitch. Pitch was a camp counselor known for his practical jokes, wild antics, and last but never least, his brilliantly told ghost stories. His ghost stories were by far the scariest my 13-year-old ears had ever heard. He would tell one story after another at the crackling campfire under the Texas moonlight bouncing off of the lake. These stories filled my mind with a healthy amount of fear as I went to sleep each night. And these stories were the most prominent thoughts in my head on the final night of camp, when all of the campers and counselors slept as a big group in sleeping bags on the bank of LBJ on a humid night. It was sometime during this final night that I woke up and noticed something strange. I looked out over the long dock jetting out over the lake and saw what appeared to be a glowing white person walking slowly up and down the dock. Was this a ghost? I kept staring in disbelief at the apparition, which looked like a man wearing an old-style diving suit, complete with a brass helmet. The figure was making no noise whatsoever. After a minute or so of watching this, I thought that this must be an elaborate prank being pulled off by the aptly named Pitch. With that in mind, I kept watching until he would no doubt make a loud noise or something to wake everyone up so we could all take a look at the ghost diver. After another minute of watching, I looked out over the lakeshore at what must have been 200 campers and counselors, and no one appeared to be awake. The only sound I could hear was a chorus of crickets chirping through the night. I then thought, if this was a prank, surely Pitch would reveal it by now. I thought, this must be a dream. I looked back at the dock, approximately 50 to 60 yards away, and the apparition was still there. It seemed like I was indeed awake. I recall like it was yesterday, digging my fingers into the cold ground to prove to myself I was awake. The ground was cool and hard as I looked at my hand with the dirt on my fingertips and under my fingernails. I was not dreaming. I looked back at the ghost diver and it started making its way up the dock and closer to where I was in my sleeping bag. Now in terror, I looked over at my friend sleeping about 10 feet away and started to go wake him up as I noticed the ghost diver was finally gone. My heart was beating out of my chest. I sat up for a few minutes to gather my thoughts, still looking at my dirty hands. I was finally able to calm down and go back to sleep. Upon awaking early in the morning, I immediately took my hands with black hard dirt on them and under my fingernails. I know what I saw was not a dream. I told my friend and a few others what happened, and of course they all thought I had a dream induced by Pitch's wild tales. Many years after this, I was asked by a friend if I had ever seen a ghost. I told my friend the story and he suggested I look on the internet to see if I could find any other sightings of this ghost. To my shock and amazement, there was. I found a story about a photograph that was taken in 2007 by a biology professor who was simply testing his camera during a research project he was conducting on the bank of Lake Travis outside of Austin. Lake Travis is about 45 miles from Lake LBJ and part of the connected Highland Lakes. After viewing his photos from the project, the professor noticed two points of light on one of the photos. He thought it must have been an animal in the distance. After he enhanced the brightness of the image, he was startled to see what could be a monster or an imposing ghost. The image that he photographed looked identical to the ghost I saw lurking up and down the dock so many years earlier. Was this the same? Could it be the ghost of one of the workers that was killed when building one of the six dams that formed Highland Lakes? Both sightings could be part of many strange happenings along these lakes that include at least nine people who have disappeared into the depths of these lakes, never to be seen again. That's it.
That's a great story, Drew.
Yeah, it totally happened. It was crazy. You know, it's like with me, I've had one really amazing UFO sighting, and one amazing ghost story, which is this one.
That is the fact that you could find that on the internet with other cases. That's uncanny.
Yeah, there's a camp nearby where our camp was. I mean, it's a campground, and they've reported all kinds of ghost sightings up and down this camp out place. It was near this summer camp.
Thanks for sharing it with us, Drew. That's a great ghost-to-ghost story. Let's go to Joshua in Grass Valley, California. Hi, Josh. Go ahead.
Hey. So this is, I mean, I battle with this topic often because, you know, I'm open-minded, let's just say.
Okay.
So I'm so open-minded that I don't know if ghosts exist or not, but I do have one story that really boggled my mind.
All right, let's hear it.
And it was that when we moved into this house when I was a kid, and we just had moved in there, and this guy who had been living there before, he had died, and he was living in the house, and, you know, he was, like, on his deathbed in the house, and he died in that house, and then we just had moved into it, and we were, like, you know, we spent at least, you know, a year, like, cleaning and fixing up the house, and in the beginning weeks when we moved in there, there was, like, you know, stuff laying around, you know what I mean? And there was this drawer, you know, there was like just like, you know, like I think that we like when we moved in there, like they didn't like move all the stuff out of the house.
Yeah, they kept things around. Sure.
Yeah. And so in this drawer, there was just this one day within the first month we were living there, my dad heard this sound and it was like, like super high pitched sound. He could not figure out where it was coming from or what was going on. And, you know, of course, you just follow where your ears are going from because, like, his brain was trying to figure out what it was. But, like, he's just like, I can't figure this out. I'm just going to follow my ears. And he went into the drawer, and in the drawer was a hearing aid. It was a hearing aid that was owned by the man who had died in our house who had owned it.
Uh-huh.
And it was making this high-pitched whining, high-pitched sound. And you know, my dad said he, like, smacked it a couple times, and then he finally was, like, you know, trying to figure out the off button, and there was some switch on the side. He turned it off, and it still kept whining. So he's just like, screw it. I'm going to open up and take the batteries out. And so he opened it up, and there were no batteries. And he smashed it until it stopped whining. And for the entire time I lived in that house, I heard another caller say this before where, like, you look to see when the wind moves doors.
That's right.
The door that we had these French doors in the middle of the house between my dad's violin shop and the rest of the house. And there was when the winds would, the doors would be completely closed. Windows, I mean, all windows completely closed. And I would sit there and a few times where I was completely alone there, and I watched that door would open and close all the time. And I would try to wrap my mind around it. And I don't know, but it's the only thing that I've ever seen in my life that proves that there is possibly that thing after life.
Those things are possibly there. You're absolutely right. Josh, thanks for sharing that with us. Karen Dahlman, of course, is the director of the Talking Board Historical Society, a paranormal researcher, author, as a leading Ouija board practitioner. She's been using the Ouija board since 1973, and here she is, the mistress of the macabre. Hello, Karen. Welcome to Ghost
hey,
to Ghost.
George, happy All Hallows Eve, and also I should say happy All Saints Day.
Did you pull out your Ouija board today? And I bet you had a grand time with it.
Of course I did. I just finished, wrapped up a seance I did for 3 hours to come on your show.
And you do get spirits coming through that, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every time I'm either speaking to spirit guides or what I would call the transition.
And of course, you know, Karen, I am opposed to Ouija boards. Don't like them.
Yes.
Think that they're evil. You've been trying to convince me for years to change my mind. It's not happening. Have you ever had an evil encounter, however? Tell us the truth.
Never. I never have. And I'll say this. You know, we always laugh and have a good time when we talk about it. But the deal is this: it's your intentions. It's where it's how you approach this tool. The board does nothing. It's not the Ouija board to be afraid of. Be afraid of people who are using the tool. Be afraid of people who are doing this work, who don't understand what they're doing, or who have intentions to bring in something negative. I mean, you can always find negativity in your life on or off the board. It has nothing to do with the board.
Why does it seem, though, that, for example, younger people, kids, when they're playing with the Ouija board, something weird happens, some kind of entity comes over that they don't want there? Why does that happen?
Well, if you look at today, what's going on in the world today, the social media influences us. And social media is a place where a lot of folklore, superstitions, we call them Ouija stitions, get spread. And so next thing you know, there's like this mass hysteria of everybody's experiencing Slender Man or the Hat Man. And regardless if they're having any experience, it becomes something that much more than maybe what it really is. I mean, we just really popular, and it has been for many years now, really back to the 70s, 60s. I mean, Parker Brother, when they first bought it, outsold all their games, including Monopoly, and sold 2 million copies that first year alone in 67. But the popularity that kept increasing, and, you know, with movies like The Exorcist and Witchboard, all kinds of weird rules were developed, and next thing you know, if it doesn't figure eight, you've got an evil spirit. And so what I see with the younger people is they're getting on the internet and hearing these stories, and the next thing you know, they're kind of creating them and ad-libbing them and making them more, you know, than they really are sometimes.
How does a Ouija board work? When you conduct a seance with it, Karen, what are you doing?
Well, okay, so we have to talk about it from two different directions. One would be what the skeptics and scientists would say, and they would say it's nothing more than your ideomotor response, which basically means it's your subconscious coming through based on this muscle movement conducted by your brain. Okay, that's one way you can look at it. The spiritualists and mediums who use it would say that's not what's happening. They're actually tapping into other energies. Maybe it's your transitioned loved ones. Maybe it's a spirit guide. Maybe it's even your higher self or inner self. When I do this work, it doesn't matter to me so much if it's what people want to say it's the ideomotor or it's actually spirit. What I like to focus on is the messages. Are the messages that I receive, because that's really what the important part is. Not so much how do they come. I mean, George, if it was me doing direct channeling or mediumship or psychic work without a board in front of me, people would more readily accept the messages. But as soon as you mm-hmm. put a board there, it's like, no, I can't, you know, I can't listen to that because the board's there. But I do believe that I am tapping into and communicating with other energies beyond myself.
All right, stay with us, Karen. We're going to take a quick break. I want to hold you over for just a little bit longer before we go back to more of our ghost-to-ghost stories. I've got a couple more questions about the Ouija board, and I understand that you are also participating with the world's largest Ouija board. I'll have you tell us about that, too. Then we're going to be back more with Karen Dahlman and the rest of your ghost-to-ghost calls. Those of you on hold, just hang with me. We will get to you ASAP. Email in from Mike, the truck driver. He says, George, I was driving near Walsenburg, Colorado, on my way to Trinidad, Colorado, and I was driving a day cab pulling a set of doubles. It was a wintry night with heavy snowfall. I had pulled off I-25 on the off-ramp to use the outdoor facilities, of course. And when I finished and walked back around to the driver's door, I noticed another set of footprints coming off the catwalk between the trailer and the tractor. The footprints went toward the rear of the set of the trailers and simply disappeared. The rest of my night, I drove with the load lights on and kept looking through my back window at the space between the tractor and the trailers. I got goosebumps just retelling this story. You picked up a ghostly hitchhiker, Michael, to be sure.
Trick or treat. Happy Halloween, everyone, from Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
We miss her, the late Rosemary Ellen Guiley, but you know what? It's great to have these tapes, and they live on forever. Thank you, Rosemary. We really appreciate whatever you're doing, and I hope you're listening to that program up there. Let's go back to Karen Dahlman for a moment as we have a few more Ouija board questions, and welcome back to Ghost, Karen, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. That was wonderful hearing Rosemary's voice.
Oh, my God. I know, and you were close with her, too.
Very close.
Why are Ouija boards so popular these days?
Well, you know, it's that mysterious nature of them. It's like you get a kind of play or taunt or toy with the unknown. And that really sparks our imagination of what's out there. I mean, the age-old question is, what happens to us when we die, what we call death? And so the Ouija board brings that up for people because it was used by spiritualists, for many years and still to this day by many mediums. And it gives people the ability to say, maybe I can explore and discover myself. Maybe I, too, can begin to learn more about the afterlife. So it kind of plays with that. Plus, I think it plays upon our fears. Hollywood did a great job, a great number of capitalizing on the Ouija board and creating some great, again, superstitions around it that people today continue to love to talk about. And look, it's a lot of fun to talk about the Ouija board on Halloween. I mean, it goes
for you.
What, for a lot of people.
What moves the planchette?
Well, okay, so what moves the planchette is the energy of the, okay, we can say idiom motor again if you want to pretend like it's your fine muscle movements of your body. Maybe it's that energy. I tend to believe it's my energy reaching and working with an external energy that helps it move. Yes, it needs my fingers on it to move. Now, I've heard stories, it's never happened to me, George, but I have heard stories of people telling me they've seen the planchette move on its own. That's never happened to me. But, you know, I won't rule it out.
All right, Karen, thank you for being on the program. We really appreciate it. Karen Dahlman, our expert on the Ouija board. Let's go back to the calls now. Wildcard caller Christopher in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, George. It's great to be back on.
Thank you, sir.
So I want to first ask you if you can do a little shout-out for me, because today marks for my dad, first of all, his 48th birthday, and second, that today is actually is another anniversary of him being a coaster, a listening out coast to coast.
Oh, that's great.
So for you, Dad, I want to say happy 48th birthday, and I love you. But I want to remember some time ago, George, when I told you a story about me encountering a succubus?
Yes.
So I'm going to retell that story for tonight's amazing audience.
All right.
So years ago, when I, in high school, I was a sophomore at the time. I had just began getting into, studying about witchcraft at the time. I was a practicing Wicca, and I still am to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this girl who lived down the street from me, who I've known for some time, for a couple of years, ever since I moved to where my parents live now. And something was always off about her, to be honest. And she had told me in confidence that before she moved, she was possessed by the demonic spirit known as a succubus. And I had my friend who was teaching me about witchcraft and how to cast spells and things like that. So I asked her if she can help me to help my friend remove the spirit of that succubus from her body. So one night we planned to, I guess, in a way, do an exorcism to remove that demonic spirit. Now, one thing that witches or warlocks would do is to cast a protection spell on them when
right.
they were to do anything that would be considered dangerous.
Kind of illuminate yourself with light or something like that, isn't it?
Exactly. I neglected to. It was the heat of the moment. But after we removed the spirit of that succubus from my son's body, that spirit actually went into my body.
Oh, no. You didn't protect yourself, did you?
No, I didn't. Now, that spirit, who, for those of you who remember, is named Chrysalis, because when she was alive, she always loved to wear a crystal around her neck.
Aha, okay.
More of a harmonic meaning to it. But as I tell most of my friends who know about Chrysalis's existence, they would have think that, she'd be extremely evil and she would possess me and make me do horrible things, but not entirely true. I mean, she does have her own personality, but she tends to help me and most of my friends out at times when we need it.
Is she still with you?
Yes, she is. Now, for tomorrow on Open Lines, I actually have an experience that Chrysalis had with another spirit. I don't know if I have time tonight to, but just wanted to.
We'll save that for another Open Line night. But do you find any part of her to be evil?
Initially, I did, but after getting to know her, I just think personally that maybe she still retains her personality from when she was alive.
What do you think she wants with you, Christopher?
I'm sorry?
What does she want?
To be honest, I'm not really sure, but hopefully someday I'll be able to know what exactly she wants and how to possibly put her soul to rest.
Now, what's the big event which would allow you to do that?
That's why I'm wanting to find out someday here. I've been doing some research of how to, help a trapped spirit move on. Now, that may be difficult because, if you remember, I gave a blood sacrifice to Chrysalis 2 years ago, actually.
I don't know why you did that. That's kind of dangerous.
I know, but it's just that she's helped me a lot, and she's helped a lot of my friends, too, and I just enjoy being around her, I guess.
Well, that's an interesting take. Well, just be careful, because by and large, everything I've heard about these entities aren't very good, and we're concerned about you, and you seem like you know what you're doing, but just be careful. Let's go to Mark in Nebraska. Welcome to the program. Hi, Mark.
Hey, George.
Hi.
This is the first time I got to call in on Ghost to Ghost.
Well, great. I'm glad you got through.
Yeah.
You've been on hold for about an hour, haven't you?
Yeah, but I've been texting my girlfriend. She lives in Thailand right now, so I've been texting her while I've been on hold. I told her I was on hold with you. So she even knows about your show in Thailand.
Well, that's great. I've got a friend who just married a girl from Thailand. And now they're working on the citizenship stuff, and that's tough. But you know what that's all about.
It's worth it. They're nice. They're nice people too. Yeah. So there's a couple stories, but one of them, my dad used to tell me all these stories. He passed away a while back, and I could have wrote a book about all the stories. He grew up on a farm in a small city in Nebraska, like Loup City, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm, that is little.
You know Loup City?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, blink your eyes and you're through it.
His father was from Minnesota, and they were German and Polish, and they moved from Minnesota to Loup City, and he grew up there on the farm. And he was a tough guy. Those old farmers, man, they were the toughest people.
Oh, they sure were. Hard workers, too.
Oh, God, yeah. He told me about stories. He lived in an old farmhouse that was haunted. And then when he moved to Lincoln, where I grew up, I was born in Lincoln, and it's a nice little college town. And he told me stories. He had an old Harley. He was into motorcycles. He had a nice Harley back then. He bought it new. And he had a garbage man. And the garbage man's name was Charlie. And you know Charlie Starkweather?
I don't know him personally, no.
Well, I mean, the guy that he was the mass murderer in, 1959.
That's the same guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. They made several movies. You know, they made a couple movies that were pretty famous on TV after, like, this. When I was a little kid, I knew about it because I was interested in old stuff. I'm one of those. I liked old music and old stuff from the 50s. And so I knew all about the old cars and old music and old stories about that. And I read a book about it, and they made movies. Charlie Sheen was one of them.
Okay.
Charlie Starkweather. And another guy, some British guy, played him. But he grew up in, he was from, like, Bennett, Nebraska. And Carol Fugate, she was from Bennett, and just outside of Lincoln. And anyway, he was a garbage man. And it's about, I think my dad's even in one of the books, the story. And we lived in the neighborhood, actually, that was in the story. And there's pictures of some of the houses where he killed the people.
Oh, my God.
And, he's... in the movie, they did a pretty good job in a couple of the movies to show. I don't think they showed the actual houses, but I drove my old girlfriend when we went back to Lincoln last year for my mom and to see her. And I drove her by one of the old houses that was in the book and in the movie, and she's like, "Oh my God, it looks the same." And it's an older style colonial house, and there's a tree in a certain place, so that's how you know which house it is. And it's in the country club area of Lincoln, Nebraska. And I grew up about three blocks from there. I was in the country club area.
Are the deceased still haunting this place?
I don't know. I heard stories about some of those old houses that are haunted in that area because it's a really old part of Lincoln, but it's a rich area. Like, all the people that used to live there were bankers and insurance owners of insurance companies and stuff. And Charlie used to be my dad's garbage man. He went to a school in nearby junior high, and he always, my dad is funny because my dad told the story just like it was on the movie. Later on, they had the movie, and he always wore a leather jacket, and he combed his hair like James Dean. He wanted to be like James Dean, and he wanted a motorcycle, but he didn't have the money, and he always looked at my dad's motorcycle sitting out in front of the house.
Oh.
Harley Davidson, real nice one. And
he had eyes for it.
Yeah, this was back in 1957 or 58 when he was looking at the motorcycle. And I think he killed he went on the killing spree in 59.
How many people did he kill?
At least seven, I think.
Jeez.
I think seven or eight, I'm not sure.
What turns somebody like that insane?
That he went kind of crazy for some reason, and he started with his girlfriend's parents, and then he even killed a baby. And then he went to a farmer's house, killed him. He went to a rich guy's house in the country club area, shot him and the maid and his wife, and stole their Packard. And back then, you know, Packard was a really nice car.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful car in those
like
days.
Like a Cadillac, yeah. He stole that, stole the Packard. He drove the Packard out of Nebraska on the way to Wyoming, and then they caught up with him somewhere outside of Wyoming, and he tried to kill another guy, and they ended up catching him, and they took him back to Lincoln and had him on trial, and his girlfriend went on trial because she didn't try to get away. They said she was an accomplice, so she ended up going to York prison.
Did they execute him?
Yep. Back then, they didn't mess around. I think less than 6 months later, he got the electric chair. And that's the way it should be, I think, because they don't want to, nowadays, especially when I lived in California, they don't want to give anybody the death penalty. But I think people like that, I mean, get rid of them, you know.
Well, as long as you can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that they're the ones, because I'm convinced with capital punishment, we probably have killed some innocent people along the line.
Yeah, it's possible. But my dad came close to being one of his victims, too, because...
He wanted his bike.
Yeah, he. I told him he's lucky. He actually went out looking for a motorcycle or a car, and he's lucky he didn't stop by my dad's. But my dad was at work, and then my dad got stuck on a mud road because it was raining, and just down the other side of the road was Charlie.
Oh, God.
He stopped at a gas station, and he killed the gas station attendant.
Jeez, what a spree was going. Hey, we're at the top of the hour. But you know what? Thank God your dad didn't get hurt.